You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with the Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And story is everything.
Yeah, we've been listening to Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont.
Yes, they're out of Dripping Springs, Texas, and we just love this band. And how are you doing tonight?
I think I'm doing okay.
I don't know.
It is okay, right?
Yeah, to me, you look like you're a little out of this world. That's what it looks like to me
in that shirt.
Yeah,
for those folks who are not watching, you just have to pretend that what this Western shirt is I'm wearing.
Yeah. Well, we are delighted that you're with us again this week for episode 137. And who is our guest tonight?
Our guest tonight is Steve Harris.
Hey.
And we're going to be talking about his book, Dads Like Us.
Yes. Hello, Steve. We are so happy to have you with us tonight.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, this is a great book. We're going to be talking in great depth shortly, A Survival Guide for Fathers Raising a Child with Disabilities, Dads Like Us. But what Jim and I have learned, which we'll be sharing throughout our time together, is this book is certainly written exactly with these folks in mind, but a whole lot more. Jim and I have been, as we've been reading and discussing, is this book can be for anybody and everybody that is maybe at a different phase in their life. And we're going to talk about that as we talk with Steve. So, Steve, where are you joining us from?
My wife Sue and I live in Lanesboro, Minnesota, which is almost near the Iowa border. It's a town of about 700 people. It's in the, they call it the Driftless area of Southeast Minnesota. And that's where we have our home right now.
Wonderful.
Very good.
I think you have a bio.
A bio.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about Steve before we get started?
Yeah, he's going to tell us more, but we'll get our audience started here. Steve Harris, our featured guest, author Steve Harris, is a husband and a father, a former pastor and a teacher, a lover of old-time baseball, and always a hopeful golfer. He is the author of two books, Lanesboro, Minnesota, and the one we'll be talking about tonight, Dads Like Us, A Survival Guide for Fathers Raising a Child with a Disability. Steve grew up in Santa Clara, California, and now lives with his wife, Sue, in Lanesboro, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Welcome, Steve.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Great to meet you and to be with you.
Yes. Well, we're delighted to have you as our special guest tonight. This is such a powerful and important book. Let's see. Do you want, Steve, is there anything else you'd like to tell us a little bit more about yourself that maybe we didn't cover in the bio?
Yes.
I think that sounds pretty good right now. Yeah, there's other things I could say, but I think those are the highlights.
A hopeful golfer. My dad used to say being a golfer is the most optimistic thing you can be.
It is.
Yeah. Do you play golf often?
Well, I'm more now than I've done in years. We have a nice little course there in Lanesboro, and I have had a little more time the last few years, and then we have a good group of guys to get up there and pretend
That's
we can
good,
play.
Yeah.
So it's a fun thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to play a little golf, Steve. I wasn't any good.
Well, I'm never any good, but.
Bobby's
father-in-law and my dad were pretty good golfers.
Yeah.
And I went one time with Bobby's dad to play golf. And at the end of the course, he said, well, Jim, he said, the next time we play, you're going to be a kid.
That's not a good sign. That,
No.
So, Steve, this is just such a powerful book. Would you take a moment? We have so much to talk about, but we'd really like to have you tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind you sitting down and writing this book. Tell us a little bit about how it all got started.
Sure. It actually traces back to a very specific moment. I have two sons, Matthew and Andrew. Matthew was born in 1980. There was nothing that prepared us really for, we were very excited as we went into the hospital that day, my wife Pam and I, to have our first baby. I said it felt like we were headed to the best birthday party ever. But within a few moments, the doctor said, we have spina bifida here, he said. Now, I had never heard the term. It took me days to figure out how to pronounce it. Within moments, they were rushing Matthew out of that delivery room to another hospital for emergency surgery. And the doctor was very honest with me. Well, first of all, one nurse came at me and said, Mr. Harris, do you want me to get a priest? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, why do we need a priest? And then I realized what she was saying. You know, they expected this to be over pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But the doctor said, you know, the next 24 hours, we'll kind of tell the tale here if he's going to make it. They rushed Pam off to a recovery room. I found myself standing in a hallway by myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't know which way to go. A nurse who had been in the delivery room, and it actually kind of troubled me because as Matthew's situation was being diagnosed, she seemed almost, she was smiling and she was kind of energized. And I thought, well, what in the world could be energizing her? Within about 10 minutes, she walked up to me in that hallway where I was standing. And she said, you know, I'm taking a grad class on spina bifida. And she said, what a coincidence is this? She said, and here's our textbook. And she handed me this, must have been a 300-page book, and said, you might want to read this. Mm-hmm. And I said in the book, honestly, I didn't want to read it. I wanted to throw it at her, sadly. I mean, it just so frustrated me at that moment. But, you know, I'm actually grateful to her because it kind of planted a seed in me that took a long time to blossom. But the feeling of, okay, I can't, that book is not what I need right now. I need something. I need somebody to say something to me right now to help me face this crisis that's happening in my life and in our life as a family. So I've been a writer all my life in different ways. It's always been kind of something I do. But even within 6 months or so, I started thinking, well, what would Dad in that situation need to hear? And if I had an opportunity to talk to a dad and have kind of a personal conversation and hopefully an encouraging and helpful conversation, what would be some of the things that dad would need to hear? What did I need to hear at that moment? Mm-hmm. Those seeds got planted. Within a couple of years, I started thinking about it more and more. And then I think what happened in I'll say God's plan is that I had to live the life, you know, for the next 40 plus years. Before I could write the book, I had to live it. So during COVID and some of those times, I had more time to sit down and really put it together and finally got it published. I feel good about it. I feel like it did become what I hoped it would be, which is a brief. It's not 400 pages, okay? It's a very brief book, but practical and positive and encouraging for dads like me to help them as they face this new challenge. Mm-hmm. So she and Nurse Smiley, I ended up calling her Nurse Smiley. Nurse Smiley, wherever she is right now, she inspired me to write this book. And I'm thankful she did.
I think when we had first, you know, read it and we were just quietly talking about it, I had said to Jim, this book should be like the Gideon Bible in every hotel room. This book should be available in every delivery room or I don't know where the right places are, but it should be handed with every couple that go out with a newborn or in every situation where, you know, a young person has just had a traumatic accident and there's all, you know, there's in a medical situation that did not exist yesterday. Right. And suddenly they have, you know, it just is that kind of a insightful, well-organized, easy to read, easy to go through and then know, oh, that chapter will be really important to me at some point and I'll be able to find it again. You know, it's just, it just felt like something almost everybody should have.
Well, yeah, particularly if you're going to have somebody that's going to be in a hospital or so, care over a few days, more than just a few days, gives you an idea how the hospital's going to work, how the people kind of think. So you're not kind of like blindsided, wow, you know?
Yeah.
What am I into, you know?
Yeah.
About every 4.5 minutes in this country, a child is born with disabilities. So in the time that we're going to be together here tonight, almost 20 children will be born. That's a lot of kids. It's a lot of parents, a lot of dads who are facing that tonight that did not expect to be there when they woke up this morning.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, you have another son, Andrew.
Yeah.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about him a little bit?
Sure. Andrew was born in 1988. It seemed like we were experiencing that, I won't say perfect, but there's a normal birth process and the hospital of fun and the balloons and the people that came by. But within a few years, we noticed that in his doctor's notice, things weren't quite progressing as they should. So Andrew went through a series of tests at about age 2, and they diagnosed him with cerebral palsy. So his situation at that point, even at that age, was different than his brother's, but still serious. And he ended up with some serious disabilities. Matthew passed away in 2020, just a few days shy of his 40th birthday. But his brother Andrew is 37. He lives in a medical group home. Both boys, we found out later through some genetic testing, almost 15 years later, both boys had inherited a really rare neurological disease that it's called Pelizaeus-Merzbacher disease, or we call it, I call it PMD, that it's not curable. It's a neurological brain disease that has all kinds of symptoms, none of them good, but that's what was happening. And but I wanted to quickly say, I always say, I love my boys. Matthew was a happy, content, peaceful person from day one. He loved to laugh. He loved to make people laugh. He had a strong, courageous spirit that I've seen in no one else. In fact, one of his doctors, a very veteran doctor in St. Paul, said, you know, Matthew can't do many things. He can't walk. He can't talk. He can't eat. We fed him through a tube his whole life. But Matthew can do one thing extraordinarily well. He can stay alive. And he did. He fought through probably 36 different surgeries and maybe twice that many crises. And he just had a will to live that was extraordinary. So just watching that was amazing.
Yeah.
Andrew is a very peaceful, content, happy young man. He's sadly, he's the disease kind of is progressive. He's kind of entered a period of, I would call it dementia, but very happy, very content, always inspiring to me. I remember he loved sports as a young man. He played through high school. He played adaptive sports. He especially loved basketball. One day he said, "Dad, I want to play in the NBA." In fact, he even wrote a letter to the New York Knicks asking how he might connect with them for a tryout. And so I had to kind of lovingly, gently say to him, "Well, Andrew, when we watch NBA games on TV, do you see anybody out there in a wheelchair?" Because he was in a wheelchair. He said, "No, I guess I'll be the first." And that's kind of the way he's looked at life and through all of his challenges. So anyway, my boys are my heroes.
Mm. Yeah, that's a positive thought on his part, wasn't it?
Do you have a Do you have a question?
A question.
We're just hoping to listen to Steve talk, but we're forgetting that, you know, we had to, like, you know, ask a question.
You know, in the early days, Steve, when both the boys, you were adjusting and both the boys' handicaps, was there ever a typical day for you?
Especially in, I'll say, the first 20 years even of Matthew's life, there were very few typical days, very few normal days. Lots of medical care, lots of doctor appointments, lots of surgeries and hospital time. Matthew, from the very beginning, also suffered from a condition called, you probably heard of this, called apnea. He had apneic spells where he would stop breathing. It could be anywhere from 15 seconds up to 3 or 4 minutes. They would happen sometimes 15, 20 times a day, and they would lead us to have to give him CPR and, you know, go through the whole thing of, the doctors told us, he said, any one of these could be Matthew's last. So when we would see him stop breathing, it was pretty tense. And that unpredictability of all of that made for some, you know, I remember giving him CPR in a grocery store aisle. I remember my wife giving him CPR in the pew of our church. You just never knew. And so that made a typical day quite rare. But thankfully, these kind of tapered off through his life, although he had them really all of his life, but not to that frequency. So anyway, we didn't have typical. Maybe no one has typical days. What is a typical normal day, right?
Right. No. That's very true.
Right. So I guess we just, one day at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, you know, my daughters growing up, and I'm thinking how much energy it took from time to time, and they physically, they were normal. And I listened to your story, and I think, you know, I don't know if I can handle that, you know?
Well, honestly, there were days.
Love conquers all, right?
there were days when I asked that question a number of times. So, but
Steve, we're going to take a very quick break.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we're really going to get more in depth looking at the book. In the meantime, though, we do want to acknowledge and thank our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. If you are a writer, are you considering taking your book on the road this summer? Need assistance planning that trip? Maybe you'd like to increase your social media presence or refresh your website. Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you. Connect with them today to make your summer and fall plans. When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Steve Harris about his fabulous book, Dads Like Us. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Our special guest, Steve Harris, in his book, Dads Like Us. You know, Steve, we think you lay out this book, it's almost like a handbook, very, very well. And you got these chapters, you know, that just seem to go, really help people go through the book and through understanding what goes on. In your first chapter, we talk about shock. And I think you touched on that very briefly, but that's where we first find out what, oh, wow, what's going on? Did you want to say anything more about that?
Well, yeah, I said that the first feelings are no feelings, because all of a sudden you find yourself just in emotional shock. It doesn't last really long, and it may be different time frame for different people, but there's certainly just a feeling this can't be happening. This was not the way this was supposed to go. You know, and yet it is going that way, and you have to make that adjustment. But it's certainly a moment of shock. But very quickly, you start to come to grips with real sadness, because what you're experiencing in those moments is really, you had a dream about having a child who was healthy and normal, and you had pictures in your head already of little league baseball games and high school graduations and weddings and all that, and all of a sudden that's all gone, and it really is like a death. It's like a, you have lost, that dream has died. You feel a grief and a sadness, and that changes over time, but I don't think it ever totally goes away. But and you realize, I love this quote, you have to stop grieving the child who did not arrive so that you can celebrate the one who did.
That's
so
good.
It's a process of you get a flood of feelings. I think dads are wired differently. I think that we are, I think, and this is a generalization maybe, but we're kind of wired to be fixers for our kids and our protectors of our kids. When we can't be that, it frustrates us. We don't really quite know what to do with ourselves. And we can get even angry with the situation that it's out of our control. And we want to be helping and protecting our kids, and we can't. So now what? So that the whole anger thing comes into it. So it really is a flood of feelings. The book, I tried to go through a number of those and talk about some practical ways to, you know, for example, I'll just real quickly, anger, you know, that somehow learning to let off little puffs of steam along the way versus waiting, don't let it build up into a big volcano. You know, be free, somehow learn to express some of those feelings in the right way so that they don't take over. But anyway, so talking about those feelings and many others, or a number of others, and how to handle them.
I think I found as a reader of this book that, again, just as Jim said, these chapters are so clearly organized, and they take us through from that very beginning when you first learn the news, kind of all the way through a lifetime. And the way that you sprinkle personal experiences in makes it for very enlightening reading. I don't necessarily want to say it's enjoyable reading, because this is kind of a, you know, a heavy topic. And yet you bring in so many stories of personal experience that we can feel it. If we have not lived it yet ourselves, we are living it with your guidance and through the lens of what you experienced. And you're just a gifted writer. You've made those stories just come to life, you know, whether it's just three or four sentences, or it's a paragraph, or it's a whole chapter. I love the stories that you share. You talk in one chapter about Joe Parrish. Tell us, he's a really good example of someone that came into your life in a special way.
Yes. Early on, I talk about the it feels like a parade comes into your life pretty quickly. Doctors and nurses and therapists, social workers and teachers, all of a sudden there's this flood of people that you're dealing with as they care for your child. And you're very thankful for them. But I think with Joe, I was talking about keep your eyes open for surprises, for people that you meet along the way that you didn't expect, that they're little, you know, gifts, you know, from God. I think that surprise us. Matthew had to go to a special school. We had moved to back to the Bay Area where I grew up. It was an hour and a half or 2 hour one-way ride to get to that school. We lived in Santa Clara. The school was up by Palo Alto, by Stanford. And how was he going to get there? There was no bus service to do it. And somehow they reached out, and a taxi cab driver named Joe Parrish showed up. And Joe was I describe him as a tall, thin guy. He looked like Bob Ross with a big, you know, perm, gray perm. And he said, I can do that. And you know, he was taking on a child who would often stop breathing and would have medical emergencies. He says, I can handle that. And for what, year and a half, 2 years, Joe every day was driving Matthew all those hours. Both of them singing country Western songs as they rode along. And that man became one of the great gifts to my son and to our family. And he was, you know, just a taxi cab driver, but so much more. So all of those people that come into your life, keep your eyes open for the surprising ones that are there for a real special reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of interesting because we were talking a little bit the other night about, you know, the normal kind of shows we have in the audience we talk to, and a lot of what we work with is fiction and nonfiction. Yeah. And we talk a lot about characterization. And we were talking, I said, well, do we have any characters here?
Yeah. Did they ever surprise you?
You know, and then we're coming up with them, see?
We got the characters. Right, there we go.
You know, we've talked about social workers, and, you know, social workers, I think, you know, can, you know, it can be, for some of us, can be good, and obviously a couple of them maybe not so good, at least with my experience. But you talked about somebody called Emily. As I remember, you pointed her out.
Right, Emily Girard. She's been Andrew's caseworker now for almost 10 or 12 years, which is really unusual because one of the things about that parade is that people come and go so often. You know, the support people, you might have a certain nurse for like one afternoon. You may have doctors that stay just a short time. But Emily's been a wonderful social worker. And I say that social workers are, they have a tough job, especially, you know, it's getting apparently tougher and tougher to support the needs of people that really have need support, and it's getting very hard. But Emily's been hanging in there with us, and I describe social workers as they guide us through a maze. You know, it's, talk about complicated stuff. All of a sudden you're hit with all this medical thing, all these medical stuff, but then all of a sudden you're faced with how the bill's going to get paid, where's my child going to get care, where they're going to go to school, and then later, what happens when they get through school? What happens when they graduate from even a special program in high school? What happens in their life? Where are they going to live? Those are very difficult questions, and social workers can help answer them.
Some of what I enjoyed about the chapters is, again, you give us tips. I mean, sometimes it's just five statements. They're the kind of statements that I would call sort of nuts and bolts or gold nuggets. They're the kind of statements I could imagine you could write on an index card and tape it to your mirror so that you were looking at them subconsciously, you know, consciously, subconsciously, or you might carry them in your wallet. And just when you're sitting through a surgery or something, you're taking out your little guidelines. They're so concise, and yet these statements are so powerful, Steve, that I think, again, I go back to, who is this book for? Certainly for exactly who you wrote it for. But I also think of it as being anybody who has a child with disabilities in their life, not just in your home, but you're a coach, you're an employer, you're a group leader of some kind, you're a pastor, a teacher, that you've got these kids that are in your life, then you need to also be equipped. I also think about it for someone who is a member of the family, but now is suddenly going to be more of the caretaker for somebody in the family that's elderly, because you talk a lot about being an advocate. And you also talk about how to talk to doctors and how to keep notes and who's going to be the one to take the notes and who's going to be the one to, you know, follow up phone calls. And I think we have that in our lives in different situations. And if it isn't happening yet, it will come.
Right. You know, you kind of touch on this, underline it, is that we're really talking about caregiving, and all of us will need caregivers. We are caregivers. I think it's 65 million people in our country today could be classified as caregivers, either with elderly parents or spouses or children. So caregiving is huge, and I think this book does have a lot to say to caregivers in general. We talk about, as you mentioned, how to deal with hospital life and doctors, and how to communicate with those folks who are, you know, hopefully helping your family and helping your loved one. But it's not easy, especially if it goes on for any length of time. I've been a caregiver for 45 years. And if you told me that a few years ago, I can't do that. But somehow it's happened, and here I am. So anyway, there are practical things in this book for caregivers, as well as the specific dads who are caregivers.
Well, I think so. We're either going to be one of the two or both. We're going to be caregivers, and we're going to be cared for.
Right.
Depending on how our life goes. So,
Yeah, we all face it.
We're going to step away again, Steve, and we're going to just take a look at one of the places that you can find many of the books of our guests on Rendezvous with the Writer, and that is our Out West Shop affiliate page on a fabulous platform, bookshop.org. When we come back, more with Steve. Don't go away. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com. Find books and CDs on the menu. Choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Rendezvous with a Writer. We're speaking to our special guest, Steve Harris, and Bobby's holding up the book, Dads Like Us. You have a chapter in here. I guess it's 19. It's on pride, and it's kind of interesting. We'd like to hear the story about this because we're talking about pride in folks that somewhat limited in their accomplishments, but you can bring out reasons why they are great.
I don't know if this is more for dads. I don't know, maybe, but we like to, dads like to brag about their kids. They like to tell them, and you can just see it in their face when they are talking about how their child or their son was a star basketball player, or their daughter's going to a great school on a tennis scholarship, or you hear those stories, and you can just see that wonderful pride they have for their kids. And you, as a dad, I want to be proud about my kids. I want to be, I would love to have some of those stories. I'm not going to have those kind of stories, and it can be a little bit painful at times because you feel like you're missing out on something. You're missing on that experience. I think what it does, though, is and there's a lot of ways in which this happens. Being a dad like me, facing those situations, having children who have disabilities, it does kind of force you to put on a different set of glasses, to see life differently, to think about what are the really valuable things in life. What are the I can be proud about my kids, not as athletes or as scholars, but like some of the things I mentioned earlier, I am so proud to have sons who have such peaceful, contented spirits. I mean, that's valuable. That's important. That's worth as much as anything. Now, I may not be able to talk about it in the same kind of ways, but it's just as real. The pride is just as real. I feel it all the time when I think about my kids. So anyway, it's almost like there are adjustments you make. One of I'm not sure, I think this was in the Pride chapter or somewhere, maybe it was, I don't know. Matthew and Andrew's great grandfather, Dr. Milan Knapp, wonderful, wonderful man, was the first physical doctor of physical medicine in the state of Minnesota. So he was working with Sister Kenny and polio epidemics of the 40s and 50s. And here he is with two sons, two great grandsons who are both in wheelchairs and paralyzed. And I would have talks with him about, the realities of all that. But one real simple thing he said to me was, you can't focus on the things that people can't do. You need to focus on the things that they can do and celebrate that and help them be as strong and to reach the potential of their life as much as it can be. And So it really is a whole new way of looking at things. And pride is one area where that comes up, is that you have the opportunity. You know, it's not automatic, and it's not without challenges, but you learn to look at life in a different perspective.
One of the tips that you give four important little short but powerful tips in the section on pride. And one of them, it goes right along with what you were just saying, help your child find activities and interests they can excel in and enjoy. And you mentioned at different times how very active they were in different sports, and I think even theater and reading, and they had all kinds of interests that you all were in a were able to encourage and develop at different stages in your
There are
life.
wonderful programs out there. Adaptive sports is one. The state where I live in, we live in, has been really huge on that, and they do a wonderful job. So yeah, find the kinds of things that your child can do. You know, it may be limited in the from other people's perspective, but go for it and help them enjoy it, and you will enjoy it too. And you connect with other. I met people. You know, other parents through all those experiences, and all of a sudden there's a network that gets built and community gets built, and you find support that's just as valuable and wonderful as hopefully as anybody else is getting in there in the normal world. So.
You probably, I'm thinking just what you just said, Kat, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, you probably had the opportunity to be a mentor to some other folks that were going to do the same sort of thing.
Well, yes and no. I hope this book maybe is a beginning of that I can be as an older dad. I'm especially I have a real special heart, I think, for brand new dads, you know, the ones who are walking into this world even in the last few days or weeks. I would love to be connecting with them. I would love, as you said, Bobby, to have this book available to those kind of dads in those situations. But, well, we probably won't have time to get into it. I think that dads, I said earlier that dads are kind of fixers, and we get frustrated when we can't. I think too that dads struggle a bit with communicating this stuff. We oftentimes we get isolated, but part of the reason for that is because we pull back ourselves. We don't know how to talk about it, maybe. We don't feel like talking about it. I don't know. Moms seem to have a little bit better skills at connecting. I don't know if that's, I think that's been true in my experience. Anyway, all that to say that I hope that I can be of, I want to stay connecting to dads, for the for that reason.
Another chapter is gratitude. And I thought, you know, this is all of us need to be grateful every day. But you want to take a moment on the power of gratitude?
Sure. James Autry is a writer. I think he was from Iowa, who had a son with autism. And he talks about the challenge of trying to be grateful for things that were so painful in his life. But he talks about developing I guess you'd call it a discipline in his life, that every morning he would go for a walk, and he calls it his gratitude walk, where he would kind of, I'll say, force himself and say, hey, what are the things I'm really thankful for today? And almost build up we'll call it a gratitude muscle. You know, of it's hard sometimes, but especially when things are going bad, when your kid's really sick, and when he's in the hospital, he got some surgeries happening or whatever. That stuff kind of overwhelms the moment. But to somehow fight through and develop that gratitude muscle, and I've tried to learn from that. I know when I do, life is better. I know when I don't, it doesn't go so well, you know. So, and that's across the board. That's not, you know, just dads. That's learning to be grateful for what we have, and to take what we have as what it is enough. It's enough for us that day, and to be thankful for it.
Well, you even mentioned examples of having such wonderful memories. One time when you were all together looking up at Yosemite at Half Dome, I think, and that you're able to go through a life and be so grateful for all of the wonderful moments, and probably even for the tough ones, because you survived them. You all survived them, you know.
And there is a sense in which, you know, those tough times and what you go through, and I went through many difficult times. I may have difficult times ahead. I mean, I'm not done with this, because I'm still a dad like me with a son who needs me every day. But there is something about being a dad like me, or going through a crisis, being a caregiver. It can change your life. It will put you, it will challenge you in ways that, like nothing else. Mm-hmm. It will put you in situations that feel totally overwhelming. That can go a couple of different directions. It's not automatic that it's going to make you stronger and better. And there were times when I really struggled. But it also opens the opportunity to grow in ways that are indescribable, that it brings a richness to life, new perspectives on life, hopefully a wisdom in life that applies all across the board.
Yeah.
And again, not just for dads like me, but for people who are in caregiving situations, or let's call them crisis situations, to say, okay, how does this all come together in a way for me that's going to make me a better person, a better dad? And that wouldn't have happened without all this. So I'm very honest in saying that being a dad like me and raising kids with disabilities is very, very difficult. It's also very, very wonderful. And I have to, you know, I remind myself of that, and I'm thankful for it every day.
That's a great outlook. That's a great outlook.
I see you have other things written down there, Jim.
Well, we'll get one more chapter. There's a lot written down here.
I know.
It's a pretty short book, but you're putting a lot in
more here. Down here than it's in the book. You know, you have a chapter that maybe you as well say a sentence or two about when we say be there.
Be there.
What's your take on that?
Yeah, that's near the end of the book. I said it's the shortest chapter, and it may be the most important one. Dads, be there. Your child needs you, so commit to being there for your child. There are all kinds of statistics these days that tell us that all kids need their dads, and we're living in a time when that's really isn't. It's less and less happening that dads are often not there for many different complicated reasons, but. And I was thinking, well, normal kids need their dads to be really successful and healthy and happy in life, what's it like for a kid with special needs? They need their dad there. The temptation is, sadly, for us sometimes even to not be there. It's a reality that many of those kids don't have a father in their life. So my word to a young dad, this is going to be hard, but be there. Commit yourself to being there for your child. Be engaged in their lives. Get involved in their medical care. Know their doctors. Know what's going on. Visit their schools. Meet the teachers as much as you can. Be there with them. And, you know, play with them. And this is all this is all heavy stuff, but you know, a lot of this, like you said earlier, this is dad stuff. You play with your kid, wrestle on the floor, take them out for ice cream, even if they can't eat it. Somehow just do the fun things that dads do and be there for your kid. Yeah. For their sake, our kids have great potential.
Yeah.
Help them reach it.
That's great. That's a good attitude.
We're going to take one last break. I'm looking at time. This has been so wonderful, Steve. We really appreciate your time with us tonight. This is one more spot. This is about our business as sponsors of the Rendezvous with a Writer. Here is a word about Out West Shop. www.theoutwestshop.com.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. Special guest Steve Harris. We're kind of in a little bit of a wrap-up stage here, Steve.
Okay.
Where can we find you? Do you have a website? Do you?
Yes, I do. I can. My website is www.steveharrisauthor.com. SteveHarrisAuthor.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. My email address, I'll just throw this out, is SteveHarrisDLU for dads like us, SteveHarrisDLU@gmail.com. I'm very eager to be sharing the book, and I hope that people will contact me. I'm setting up times this summer and fall to be out sharing about the book, and I would love to be out there talking. If there are groups, I picture talking to young medical students, nursing students, chaplains, social worker groups, parent groups, anywhere where these families are kind of uniquely connected. But I would love to be out there personally. I've done some of that in the beginning now, and I look forward to doing more of that. I do want to say real quickly before, I don't want to lose this, that this book, I hope, will encourage people who are not dads like me, but who have some connection to them, to be sensitive to those dads, be aware of them, know that they need to be seen. It's not always easy, but reach out to them. Just simple questions. How are you doing? How's your child? Those little moments of mean a ton to that dad. And a stronger dad is a better dad. A better dad will help that child. It's all about the child.
Yeah. Do you have a quote?
A quote.
Jim, I think you have time.
We have a quote. Well, he does. This is pretty good. You know, this is from the chapter on doctors. And it's kind of like a quote inside a quote. I read this passage. Doctors aren't miracle workers. They do the best they can for your child. Most do a great job. Praise to the few that go for the extra mile. Doctors aren't gods. As they say, medicine is practiced. Another doctor put it this way. Half of what we learned in medical school was probably wrong. We're just not sure which half. We want to thank the doctors. We want to think doctors have all the answers. They don't. Another painful reality, not all medical challenges have happy endings. We appreciate what you wrote.
That is from the chapter on doctors, from, of course, the book we've been focused on tonight, Dads Like Us. Next week, we kick off June. I can't believe it. And we have a full house next week, so we hope that you'll come join us. It's the first Thursday of the month, so Henry Park, film editor for True West Magazine and the author of The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them. Henry will be with us, along with two writers. We have two gals, and our whole theme is Reno, the Wild West of Divorce. And this is all about divorce ranches. Who knew there were divorce ranches? What I'm learning. We'll be talking to Peggy Wynn Borgman with her book, The Better Half. And then Sandra McGee, who wrote this, was involved in her dad's memoir, William L. McGee's The Divorce Seekers. And he was, it's the true story of a Nevada divorce ranch wrangler. So this is going to, it'll be a really fun show, and we hope that you'll join us next week. Steve, thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Being
Thanks,
with
Steve.
Us
thank
tonight.
You very much. We appreciate
delightful
it.
Delightful to have you with us.
Thank
Do you.
Do you
have a parting comment?
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing. We'll keep reading. See you down the trail. Good night, everybody.